This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you, and welcome to the one talk show in America that helps make better money moves. We live for it right here on the Ray Lucia program. Glad to have you on board. 844-RAY-SHOW. If you want to jump in, 844-729-7469. Emails at raylucia.com, raylucia.com. Really big shoe planned for you today, Johnny Boy. How you doing?
I'm all right, although I hear crickets when I talk. When you talk, when you start talking, there goes the crowd. We talked about this yesterday, you know, you being the star factor, the guy that's a... And then the featured player is here, you know, who could star.
Are you talking about Gene Pastula is going to be here at the bottom of the hour?
I'm talking about me.
Oh, I want to talk about you.
It's time to talk about us. Yeah.
Johnny Dean, director of this program. Without Johnny Dean, the show doesn't go on.
Oh, it's a polite applause.
There you go. See that?
Yeah. I miss polite applause. Everybody yells woo these days.
Gene Pastula, he is a CFP. He's a big dog. And a good friend of this program will be joining us in a little bit. I always enjoy having Gene on the program. Even if you don't learn anything, you'll have a good time.
Well, when you say he's a big dog, you mean that in a nice way. You're not saying
the guy's
a big dog.
No.
He's a big dog. I mean, he's sort of a big wig in the insurance industry.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's
kind
of a big dog himself.
He's a pretty big boy. Yeah. No doubt about it. Gene Pastula will be joining us. We've got a lot on the docket today, John.
Yeah, what do we have? I mean, we got to work it around Gene.
Well, tax a little bit. And I've got some stuff to talk to Gene about. I always got questions for Gino, as I call him. But I got thinking about something that you wrote. I guess I read it yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you know what? We ought to be talking about this on the air, John.
Oh, yeah.
Because time is running out to fix the IRA mistake of the century, which is not taking your required minimum distribution. Can you remember what you wrote?
I absolutely can remember what I wrote.
Okay, because I'm going to ask you about that.
Okay.
Coming up here in just a bit. And it's not just... the required minimum distributions. It has to do with overfunding IRAs. There are individuals that put too much money in, or they funded a regular and a Roth, and they didn't realize you can't do one or the other. If you do both of them, you still can't exceed the $5,500 or $6,500 for last year and all that good stuff.
They funded the Roth thinking that they were eligible to do so, wound up making too much money, and didn't realize it.
Exactamundo. Also, Americans are focusing on debt management but lose focus on retirement savings. You know, we've had this conversation many times before because so many people, especially many pundits on radio and television, are really force-feeding people on getting out of debt, which is good. But sometimes, like in the case of student debt, you have so much of it.
Yeah.
You never, ever get to fund retirement. And so I thought we'd bring that up. How do you balance between putting money away for your retirement and paying off your student loans or paying off any kind of debt for that matter? Do you just focus all of it, like many say, and just get out of debt and then worry about it? Or do you kind of do a little bit of this and a little bit of that?
You do a little triage with your debt is what you do. You decide what's important to take care of now. And then you decide what's important or not as important, and you wait. You wait. Although there are people who say everything's important, get it all out of the way. Don't even think about funding for anything else until you get out of debt. I don't agree with that, but okay.
We'll talk about it sometime today. But I start today with this. Remember the other day we were talking about how American ingenuity solves a lot of problems over time, whether it's healthcare. We talked specifically about peak oil. The fact that a decade ago, we were running out of the stuff and there was this great panic and oil prices went up to the sky and so forth. It wasn't even a decade ago. And now today, we're the largest producer of oil and natural gas, and it doesn't seem like anybody is concerned about peak oil anymore. What they're more concerned about is climate change and CO2.
Right.
So I came across a study that I'll tell you about, which is really interesting, and it points out how American ingenuity may even be the new Green Deal. Sit back, folks. Oh. Relax. This is the Ray Revolution. No doubt about it.
You're going to get revolution once in a while.
I like it. It's all good. Thank you. It's better than some of the other ones, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we could play Bread.
Make It With You.
I want to make it with you. Or something like that. I actually had to sing that song.
You did, really?
At a fashion pageant once. I was like co-emceeing. It was
called
horrible.
If. That's the sound you make when you sing it. If.
Oh, God. It's painful.
It's awful.
So check this out. Trevor Nace wrote about this. I think it was in Forbes or somewhere. Scientist just pulled CO2 from the air and turned it into coal. I read that. I'm going, seriously? Now, I'm not going to get into the whole global warming, climate change debate. Yeah, the globe's warming, the globe's cool. I'm not going to get into that political debate because it's more political than just about anything else. And the 12-year thing, and I've read the same study that, what's her name, OAC? Is that what they call her?
Ocasio-Cortez,
AOC.
AOC, yes.
Anyway, let me just read from this because it makes the point that, of course, you've got to be concerned about all kinds of stuff. The environment, World War III, nuclear weapons, famine, trafficking, the border. There's all kinds of stuff that we got to worry about.
Pestilence, don't leave out pestilence.
Exactly. Scientists just pulled CO2 from air and turned into coal. Here's what they had to say. Scientists have discovered a breakthrough technology, a way to pull CO2 from the atmosphere and turn it back into coal. The new discovery has the potential to change the way we think about CO2. The research published in Nature Communications provides a step-by-step guide into turning CO2 into coal, acting to remove the greenhouse gas from the atmosphere and lock it away in solid carbon form. Now, major oil companies, as you can imagine, are investing billions of dollars in this technology. Shell, for example, is one of them. Evidently, and I, of course, have no idea how they can do something like this because I am no scientist.
Well, there are ways to do it, not just that way. They've found different ways to do it on a very small scale. The problem is you got to do it on a large scale, and you got to get countries like China involved.
That's a whole other discussion because China would probably get involved. They are involved in this study, in this research, by the way. There are several countries that have teamed up on this. But the cost is the issue right now. Obviously, they're just starting out, and the costs are very, very expensive to do it. But then again, the cost of changing every building in the country and getting rid of all the cows is kind of expensive.
They're going to have to do something. You're right. They're going to have to do something. And something is going to cost a lot of money. So what do you do?
One way or the other.
One way or the
other. It's going to cost a lot of money. Right. So let me just read this. It's fascinating to me. This recent development adds another method to efficiently lock away carbon dioxide in a safe and long-term way. This isn't the first time scientists converted carbon dioxide into solid form, as you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But the way you're talking about required extremely high temperatures, making the approach not practical beyond a laboratory setting.
Large scale, it's almost impossible.
To convert CO2 from the atmosphere into solid carbon coal, the researchers used a cerium-containing liquid metal catalyst, which is uniquely efficient at conducting electricity and has specific properties. Of course, I know all about that.
Cerium, one of my favorite chemical elements.
As long as it goes into a Mountain Dew, it's all good.
CO2 goes into a Mountain Dew.
I know.
Yes.
When the researchers electrically charged a vessel with CO2 and the liquid metal, the carbon dioxide began to convert into small flakes of coal. The solid carbon flakes naturally detach from the liquid metal and fall to the bottom of the vessel, allowing for continual production of solid carbon from carbon dioxide. The end product can also hold an electrical charge, meaning it could be used as a supercapacitor after the process. See, I'm so bad at science. I'm reading this, and I'm saying, how on God's green earth did somebody sit in a room once and think about this and figure it out.
They've used 30 years worth of knowledge, at least, regarding, you know, all this stuff, and they put it all together and said this could happen. These are how scientists work.
Yeah,
that's why I'm not. I'm not a scientist.
I guess you could apply it to the financial industry too. After 40 years,
well, that's it. That's
it. Expert in my field.
I mean, somebody could come up to you and say, "How do you design a strategy? How do you even know what to do?" And you say, "Well, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I've been using studies from everywhere to come to these conclusions."
And speaking of studies from everywhere, there are more, and we'll talk more about not this, but other really important topics. But the point that I wanted to make, folks, is you don't have to freak out and think the whole world's coming to an end in 12 years. American ingenuity has solved many, many problems. And as we talk more about longevity and so forth, you will see that those problems are being solved by the day. So stick around. Don't go away.
Download the Biz Talk Radio app, available in iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
Everybody talking about the seventh sun. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia program. All right, so it is tax season. It's coming up, and if you happen to have missed your first required minimum distribution, you've got a little bit of time to make it happen. But if it wasn't your first one, you got some potential problems. A 50% penalty. Johnny Dean actually wrote a very good piece on this.
Well, thank you.
That I read just yesterday. I'm sure you wrote it before that. But
I wrote it a month ago.
The time is starting to run out here, is it not?
It is running out. Let's talk, first of all, if you have your first required minimum distribution. If this is your first one, you turned age 70 and a half sometime last year, sometime between January 1st and December 31st. You had a required minimum distribution for that year. Now, some people think that you have to wait till after you turn 70 and a half. You don't. If you turn 70 and a half in the year, any distribution you take out will count first toward your RMD, which for some people is going to mess them up on a Roth. We'll talk about that later. But that will count toward your RMD. However, if you missed it for whatever reason, you forgot, you wanted to wait till you retired, maybe you're going to retire and you wanted to wait till you're in a lower tax bracket the following year, you have until April 1st or the 15th. April 1st of the following year. So if you missed it last year and you're 70 and a half, you have until April 1st, only if that's your first required minimum distribution. Now, if it's not, and you just didn't take it for whatever reason, you're facing a potential, as you said, Ray, 50% penalty. So if I was supposed to take $4,000 out of my, you know, $100,000 IRA, and I missed it for some reason, or I only took $2,000, let's say I missed it completely, I got, not only have to take the $4,000 out and get tax on it, $2,000 gets thrown out the window.
That's
an
the penalty.
Extra $2,000. That's the penalty.
But the IRS has gotten a little kinder and gentler, and I liked what you wrote about that, because there is a potential out.
They have. The out used to be, it was up until probably a year or two ago, that the IRS actually wasn't even really policing it. A lot of times people just got away with it. But I think it was a year ago or 2 years ago, they were starting to crack down more on this, and so we're starting to see more of the penalties. However, they do allow you... there's a form. I think it's 5396.
5329.
I'm sorry. Okay, 5329. I knew the 53.
That's pretty good,
was in
though.
There.
You got half
no,
of it right.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
It's 53 something.
It's 53 something.
Just go to 53, and you'll find it.
Which does other things, but since I'm not 70 and a half, I never look at it. 5329. So first thing you got to do, if you missed your required minimum distribution from last year and you're facing a penalty, go in and get it done. Take the distribution.
Got to take the distribution immediately.
They're not even going to listen to you or any of your explanations you don't do it. So get that done first. Second, you got to find that form 5329. Form 5329 is, I haven't looked at it, but it is the form that you fill out, and it talks about why you missed the required minimum distribution.
Yeah, ate my homework type thing doesn't necessarily work.
No, that doesn't work. However, what you do is you fill that out, the reason for missing it, and you can also attach a letter of explanation saying here's what happened. They will accept certain, at least in the past, it's not guaranteed, they have accepted in the past certain excuses. illness, death in the family.
Broker error.
Broker error, yes. We have actually seen that.
We have indeed seen that.
Which means in some cases also, I don't know if you can get away with incorrect advice because that's very hard and it's usually not appropriate. However, it has been done. And there was one where the, you know, you moved and you didn't get the communication between the, you know, your broker or whatever. Certain things can be used as an excuse. IRS gets that form. They get your letter of explanation and you say, I've taken it. It's already done. You wait. And I think if you don't hear from them after a few months, you should hear back from them. But if you don't, you can consider it the matter closed. So all is not lost if you haven't taken your required minimum distribution. But you know what? You know how you take care of this? Take your distribution early in the year.
Yeah.
It's always a good idea to take your required minimum distribution early in the year.
Yeah, we should also talk about how you take that required minimum distribution. So many people think they have to actually liquidate assets inside the plan. In particular, if you've lost money or whatever, take Apple stock or Amazon or Facebook or some other stock that, like, late in the year they got creamed and so forth. You can actually take your required minimum distribution in kind by re-registering the shares. That way you don't have to sell them, pay a transaction fee, although there might be a small cost in re-registering shares, and then you just take the shares. Of course, you still have to pay the taxes, but then you still own the stock. And if the stock got hammered late in the year and it goes up in value, and then you sell it, you get capital gains tax treatment on the increase. So think about that for required minimum distributions. Many times it's better to take the shares rather than take the cash.
Many people don't. You know who else didn't know this way back about 10 years ago?
Who that?
Congress. They, I think it was 2010 and 11. Maybe it was just one or two of those years back then. They actually said you don't have to take a required minimum distribution. Remember the stocks were down? They waived the RMD requirements for one, and it may have been 2 years, I'm not sure. But it, certainly at least one. They said, well, you know, the market's down. We don't want you to have to sell anything and take the distribution. So we're going to be kind and not let you.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
But
you're right.
You know something?
If it was dumb.
That would have been the perfect time.
Absolutely.
You don't sell the shares. You do exactly what you just said, which was take the money out or take the shares out, but keep them. You just take it in kind, distribution. Yes, you pay the taxes. Shares are down, value's down. You're paying a lower tax because it's worth less. You've now got it in your personal account where it can grow on a capital gains.
There's all kinds of other things that you can do once you get it out, because even if, and obviously, those stocks, many of them tripled since then.
Yeah.
So you can gift those shares to somebody in a lower income tax bracket. They can cash them in, perhaps in a 0% bracket. Think about that for a minute. You have, you know, kids that are 25, 30 years old, just got married. They've got a house. Maybe they don't have a house. They can have, what, almost $80,000 of taxable income and pay a 0% tax on capital gain. There's nothing better than zero.
Nothing better than zero when it comes to taxes.
Taxes.
There's a reason you mentioned age 25 for the kids.
Yes.
I don't want people to gloss over and say, heck, my kids are 12. They don't have a job. They don't have any income.
Well, the kiddie tax is what
you're talking
about. The
kiddie tax is what
we don't want to get into that. There's also this thing called an excess contribution.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't realize that if you put too much money in, there's a 6% penalty that you have to pay every single year. Now, I don't know if you remember back in the technology days when you were a brilliant tech investor.
Boom.
But there was a strategy that they used to talk about, which was overfunding, like putting $50,000 into a Roth IRA.
And the limits were like $2,000.
Limits were like $2,000. And you let it grow, and it was okay to pay the penalty.
Because your stocks were growing at 20% per year or whatever.
Yeah, that kind of blew up. It's a dumb move. If you have made an excess contribution, you want to do the same thing. Get the money out. You will pay tax and a penalty on your gain of 10%, not 50%. And then you can start over from scratch. You could hold over to the next year, but just get the money out.
Get it out.
Okay, Gene Pastula is blessing us with his presence.
Champing at the bit.
Coming up next. Stick around.
Let's have a chat about your debit card.
To your feedback by emailing info@biztalkradio.com, or you can send us comments via the BizTalk Radio app.
Hey, welcome back, folks. It is the Ray Lucia Show. Glad to have you on board. Hey, Bulldog.
How you doing?
Gene Pastula, we played that song just for you, by the way.
I know, and I never heard of it before.
But never heard that song
before?
No,
but I like it.
It's a great song. It's an old Beatles song called Hey, Bulldog. Yeah. Listen, I've got a couple of things to talk to you, but it's been a while since we've had a nice chat. Mm-hmm. How do you want to be remembered? I know that you are involved very much in life insurance and long-term care, and you're one of the preeminent experts in the field. And I know that you are one of the people that actually invented many, many years ago the so-called linked benefits plan.
Right.
But I got thinking about this as I read this early this morning. Now, Steve Vernon, I don't know if you know him. He's an actuary. He's a really, really smart guy. Writes for Forbes and Money Watch and all that.
I think I met
him
once.
Did you?
In my younger days.
A brilliant guy, by the way. Uh-huh. And he writes, "How do you want to be remembered?" And I said, you know, I'm going to ask Gene about that. Because 69% of Americans say they most want to be remembered for the memories they've shared with loved ones. How does Gene Pastula want to be remembered?
Memories I've shared with loved ones. Well, I guess I want to be remembered that I never cheated anybody and I was helpful. And, you know, and then the loved ones are on their own for the rest of it. You know, it's pretty much really all you can, I mean, there's only so much you can control.
There were four distinct pillars: values and life lessons, instructions and wishes for late life care and distributing assets, financial assets and real estate, personal possessions of emotional value or significance. And when forced to choose, 59% of the survey respondents said that values and life lessons are the most important part of one's legacy.
I think that for your children is particularly, yeah.
Children and grandchildren. Yeah. But I want to talk for just a minute about the economic side of this, mm-hmm. because not that money solves all problems, but certainly leaving a legacy behind can go a long way toward not only getting your nice picture on the mantle, but helping the kids long term become financially independent.
Sure, at the very least, having not incurred substantial responsibilities or substantial depletion of whatever you do have, because a lot of people don't have a whole lot of money to be a legacy, and what money they have and income they have, they certainly are not in a position to purchase a life insurance. I mean, the easiest way to leave a massive legacy is just buy a life insurance policy. I mean, you know exactly what the legacy will be, and the rate of return on the money that you use to purchase that beats a lot of investments that people make.
Yeah, tax-free. Yeah. Obviously, you do the math, and you compare it to, say, a municipal bond. You and I actually have talked about using a second-to-die life insurance policy. And I think the one you quoted me years ago created an enormous tax-free rate of return if death occurred at, like, 90.
Yeah, if you die at 90 or before, the rate of return is in the 7, 8, 9%
tax-free.
Over that, it's in the 3, 4, 5% tax-free. So of course, if you really want to get, die as early as possible, but I don't think anybody wants to put that into their estate plan. But the biggest thing that people face in that age range in retirement really now is the cost of care that they may incur, which percentage wise is pretty high. Our next door neighbor right now, his wife had a serious stroke a while back, and he now has. Now, of course, this guy has a lot of money, but it's going. I mean, it's going down at a pretty significant clip because he's got three caregivers,
24/7. So every 8 hours they change shifts.
Exactly,
yeah.
And actually. So, I mean, he's got to be paying. He's got to be paying $20,000 a month.
Yeah. Wow.
Easy, you know. That's a big one, and it's been going on over a year now.
So talk about that for just a moment, because I know that's your area of expertise. Mm-hmm. Nobody, folks, knows more than Gene Pastula when it comes to providing for the economic side of long-term care. You use a product that's called a linked benefits plan. Talk
yeah, we
that.
Developed the concept of linked benefit almost 30 years ago now, where we took a life insurance policy that we could configure in any way we wanted, you know, how to pay for it and all the rest. And we got the insurance company to agree to be willing to pay the death benefit of that life insurance policy out prior to the client dying if he needed it to pay for long-term care. So people who maybe otherwise wouldn't even need life insurance or want to buy it or whatever can now use this kind of a product to pay for care if it's needed, but if they never need the care, then all that they put in plus a rate of return in most cases will end up going to their kids, so it's not wasted. And one of the biggest objections that people have about buying a traditional long-term care insurance policy is the fact that if they don't need it, which they're mostly sure they won't,
of course,
even though over half of us will, that money would be wasted if they didn't use it. Whereas the money they put into this kind of a product will actually come back to someone. It'll either pay for their care or a substantial portion of it, depending on how big a amount of money that they're willing to capable of putting in, or all of it, you know, in some cases.
The objection that I hear more times than not is it sounds too good to be true, because not only do you get the long-term care benefit 3, 4, 5 times what you put in, you have pretty much almost complete liquidity. If for some reason you say after 5 years I quit,
the way most people buy it is to actually just transfer a lump sum from a money market or bank account portion of their portfolio, or maybe annuities that they have sitting around that they had for years that they had to set aside for emergencies and that sort of thing, and they just put it in one time. And in those kind of cases, they can have the option of having a full-time money back guarantee, so that they can get the money back anytime they want, or take a small hit, like maybe 10%, so that if you put in $100,000, you're always guaranteed to get at least $90,000 back if you want it for some other reason. But then, of course, the benefits are much better. And most people take that, quite frankly, but you know, it just depends on the circumstances. Or you can fund it on an annual basis, and you choose how much you want to fund it. I mean, it's like people ask me, well, how much does it cost? Actually, it's a matter of, it's like, you know, setting up a bank account. You know, you don't walk into the bank and say, how much does it cost to have a savings account? You decide how much to put in every year. And so what we can show you is that if you put in whatever you want to put in at your age and health issues and whatever, then we can show you how much it'll provide you in benefits if you need it.
That brings up an interesting question. At what age should people start considering to do this linked benefits plan?
Well, certainly they should start if they ever get concerned or the question comes up in their mind because of you know, maybe parents are using it and they see how expensive long-term care is. And of course, the earlier they do it, the more benefit they get for the money they're going to put in. But certainly, you know, when you get into your late 50s, early 60s, before you start developing age-related, you know, illnesses or conditions, which obviously may affect whether or not you can get it. But certainly, you know, I did mine when I was in, I started when I was in my early 50s, and I did a 10 pay situation, so I'm all done and have been done for a long time. So the sooner you can do it, the more likely are you're going to have a greater benefit and a likelihood of getting it.
Gene Pastula.
Can I give him my phone number?
You can. Give it out
yes,
now, quickly.
800-238-8144. 238-8144. That's an 800 number. Just ask for me.
Gene Pastula. He is the president. He is the founder, Westland Financial. He's the guy. 800-238-8144. Gene, I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Take care.
Okay.
We'll be back. It's the Ray Lucia Show.
Do you owe $10,000?
Market. Keep listening to Biz Talk Radio. Online at biztalkradio.com.
To the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves, a special thank you to Gene Pastula, 800-238-8144. Johnny, he actually invented, I've known Gene for 30 years.
Yes.
And he also helped me write a chapter in my very first book on, they didn't call it linked benefits back then, I forget what they called it, but he was the pioneer behind that particular product that's now sold in virtually every bank in America, and of course he has access to all of the products through his company. He's a really, really good guy and a really smart guy.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, it's been around for 25, 30, whatever years, probably 25. But you only started really hearing about it, I think. At least I did over the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, it's been around. The banks have been using that product because people come in, they've got, you know, $100,000 sitting in a certificate of deposit or a money market fund that's paying almost nothing. And you just simply transfer the asset. And you still have liquidity. You still have access to the money, if not 100% of it, but most of it. And you get you put $100,000 in, you get $400,000 or $500,000 worth of care. And if you don't need it, it's a couple $100,000 to your heirs when you get hit by a truck.
This is another one of those things where I would say, why not? Just like with the qualified charitable distributions, if you're going to self fund your long term care, why would you not do this? I mean, I can't think of a reason.
Oh, well, I'm sure people come up with them, but
to hear them.
I'd like to do an email or two.
We
had one that we didn't get totally through yesterday, I think it was.
Yes.
Hit it, fellas. Let's do some emails.
Okay. This was signed by John and Teresa, but it was really John, I think, who was sending it. So I'll do it again.
Okay.
I earn over $225,000. John says, can I do a backdoor Roth IRA? Both my wife and I have rollover IRAs. We have about $40,000 of surplus money that we can save beyond the 401k plan. Now, you did answer this yesterday. It may have been in the other hour. So those listening now may not have heard the answer very quickly.
Well, he can do a backdoor. He can't do a traditional Roth IRA. He's got to do a non-deductible IRA and then flip and convert it to a Roth. But where the thing gets a little bit tricky is when you start to take the money out. And this is where we ran out of time yesterday. Mm-hmm. But remember, an IRA is an IRA is an IRA. So whether it's non-deductible, whether it's a traditional IRA, whether it's a rollover from a 401k, a SEP IRA, all of those are still traditional IRAs. So to do the backdoor Roth, you would fund a non-deductible yet still traditional IRA, say you put $6,000 in. All right. Now, when you go to convert it, you've got to look at all of your IRAs. You have a rollover from a prior 401k. You've got a SEP. All of those IRAs are taken into account. So when you do the conversion, you have to account for all of your IRAs, not just the post-tax money. And that's where people get tripped up.
It's the hang-up.
And the example I used yesterday, I'll go through it again because it's easy math. You got $100,000 when you add all of your traditional IRAs together, $10,000 of which is post-tax contributions.
Just supposing in this example.
Right. So you say, well, I want to take that post-tax money and get it into a Roth so that the future growth is tax-free. That's smart. But in order to do that, you're going to have to get rid of all of the pre-tax money somehow by potentially rolling it into a 401k, because a 401k is still considered a qualified plan, not an individual retirement account. Now, if you can't do that, if you can't roll it into a 401k, you also can't do the $10,000 of post-tax money directly into a Roth, because everything is prorated. Basis over the full amount, in that case, 10% of the money, $10,000 of the 100 grand, was post-tax money. 90,000 is pre-tax money. If you converted just the 10, say you set it up in a bank account.
Right. I've got it totally separate from all my other IRAs.
It doesn't matter. So as you did the Roth conversion, you would end up with the $10,000, $1,000 of which would be tax-free because it was post-tax money. The other $9,000 would be subject to a tax. You'd have $10,000 in the Roth, but you'd pay tax on $9,000.
Yeah, it can mess you up. And if you don't mind paying tax on $9,000, fine. But usually that's not why people do the Roth two-step.
That's right.
So it's step two where it can mess you up. Now, very quickly, the part we didn't get to of the that I thought you should address, and you did too, was the fact that they have about $40,000 of surplus money to save beyond the 401k plan. I'm guessing the $225,000 they make is after they've already maxed out their 401k.
Yeah, so in this case, you'd do the backdoor Roth for part of it, theoretically, and you still have, say, $30,000 left over. So then the question is, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? Because you could put the money into a diversified stock portfolio, and of course, you'd get capital gains tax treatment on the gain. You might get special dividend treatment, probably would, on dividends. And you might get some ordinary income if it's in a mutual fund or something like that, because there's, like we talked the other day, there's 100% turnover in most mutual funds. So, you know, maybe if you got 8%, you'd net the thing out to about 6 after taxes, and that wouldn't be a bad deal. But one of the things that's become extremely popular is something called an index universal life. Now, you got to be like under 50 for this to really work. But if you're in your 30s or 40s, and you don't look at this with your financial advisor, I think you're making a big mistake, because it's like a super Roth. You put post-tax money in. The money grows on a tax-free basis. You can pull money out tax-free. You've got FIFO tax treatment. But the way these are constructed, especially if it's like an index universal life, your borrowing costs may be 4%. But your earnings rate could be as much as 6 or 7 or 8%. And there's leverage there. You continue to earn money even on the borrowed money. We call that positive leverage. And you got to look at it in detail to understand it, because these are not unsophisticated products. But they are very, very competitive. If you die early, obviously your heirs get a tax-free death benefit. If you don't die and you need like long-term care, you get dementia someday, you can tap into the death benefit early. So you die too soon, you live too long, you can get a tax-free retirement income. I highly encourage people that are healthy and that are individuals that can afford to put money aside for a certain period of time to look into an indexed universal life.
And with that, we're out of time.
Johnny, thank you. Folks, if you'd like to email me, go to raylucia.com. I have information on everything we talk about in this program. Now make it a blessed day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions online at raylucia.com. Forget